One aspect of dysphoria that is often overlooked is the concept of voice dysphoria. It's essentially feeling like it doesn't represent who they are as a person.
I found Beautiful Aliens, a Steve Abbott reader, to be a voice from the past that addresses the present.
Multiple private animal park owners are interviewed, and the word average could never be used to describe any of them.
I saw tigers.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Costa Rica jumps last marriage equality hurdle, readers abducted by Abbott's Beautiful Aliens, and what's the thing about Tiger King? Those stories and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Laura Dickinson-Turner.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending May 23rd, 2020. Marriage equality has finally come to Costa Rica. About two dozen right-wing lawmakers tried to delay the inevitable by proposing an 18-month extension on a 2018 Supreme Court order because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Those efforts failed this week with a vote of 33 against and 20 in favor. The first gay and lesbian couples are expected to start tying the knot in Costa Rica on May 26th. It's been a long and bumpy road that began with a ruling by the Inter-American Court of Human Rights in January 2018, ordering all members of the Organization of American States to open civil marriage to same-gender couples if they had not already done so. Several Costa Rican court rulings later, the Central American nation's Supreme Court ordered the Legislative Assembly to enact marriage equality in November 2018 and gave them up to 18 months to get it done. A two-hour Yes, I Accept celebration of the historic event is planned for television and Facebook Live broadcast the day before. A number of other Organization of American States member countries continue to defy the Inter-American Court's marriage equality order.
Taiwan celebrated the first anniversary of marriage equality this week. LGBTQ ally President Tsai Ing-wen declared in a social media post that values that people want to protect still stand. At the same time, we have allowed more people to have happiness. A whopping 92.8% of respondents to a survey released on May 15th said that opening civil marriage to same-gender couples has not affected them personally in any way, according to the Taiwan News. Equality activists are now pushing for the right of all binational queer couples to marry in Taiwan. That's only allowed under the current law if the foreign national also comes from a marriage equality country. About 1,000 same-gender couples are said to be unable to marry because of that restriction. There's no such barrier for binational heterosexual couples. A government survey conducted in early May found that 53% of respondents believe that all same-gender couples should enjoy the same marriage rights as their heterosexual counterparts, an impressive increase of more than 15% since a similar question was asked in 2018. The government's China news agency reports that an online petition launched on May 9th to demand that all qualifying same-gender couples be allowed to get married in Taiwan. Activists are hoping to gather at least 10,000 signatures to push the government over the marriage equality finish line.
Albania has become the latest country to ban conversion therapy. The therapy that falsely claims to make queer people straight usually includes prayer and various questionable behavioral techniques. Albania's Order of Psychologists said in its announcement that any of its members who continue to insist that they can cure LGBTQ people would be punished. The order was created by legislation in 2017 and oversees all registered psychologists in Albania. The move runs counter to the country's otherwise relatively low rating when it comes to LGBTQ acceptance and rights. The European Union officially condemned conversion therapy in 2018 and urged all of its member states to ban the practice. Albania is the third to do so, joining Malta and Germany. According to Pink News, Switzerland has a de facto ban. and lawmakers in Spain and the United Kingdom are considering similar actions.
The Uganda 19 were released by court order on May 18th, and prosecutors have dropped all charges. The 13 gay men, 2 bisexual men, and 4 transgender women had been taken into custody on March 29th in a police raid on an LGBTQ homeless shelter outside Kampala. They were charged with violating COVID-19 lockdown rules that bar gatherings of more than 10 people. The defendants were denied bail and spent almost 7 weeks in jail, where coronavirus has been spreading rampantly. It's not known if any of the detainees actually had COVID-19 or had even been tested for it. They were only allowed to see lawyers a few days ahead of the scheduled trial. Uganda is notoriously one of the worst places on the planet to be queer. Human Rights Watch called the arrests and detentions arbitrary, abusive, and contrary to public health. The detainees were represented by the Human Rights Awareness and Promotion Forum. Lawyer Patricia Kamira said that the ban on public gatherings does not apply to homeless shelters. She called it the right decision to withdraw the charges, since it was a targeted arrest with trumped-up charges.
Chechen despot Ramzan Kadyrov is reportedly one of the latest world leaders to be hospitalized with COVID-19. A number of reports say that Kadyrov was flown from Chechnya's capital of Grozny to a hospital in Moscow for treatment this week. Some say he suffered serious lung damage from the virus, but his actual condition remains a mystery. Like some other autocrats, Kadyrov initially downplayed the seriousness of the pandemic. Then he ultimately instituted some of the strictest lockdown rules on the planet. Kadyrov came to power in 2007 in the wake of 2 bloody bids for independence from Russia during the 1990s after the Soviet Union collapsed. He's governed with an iron fist in relative independence from Russia's federal government, but is a well-known ally of Vladimir Putin. One of Kadyrov's claims to fame has been his genocidal effort to rid his mostly Muslim region of all LGBTQ people. Despite widespread condemnation, Putin and Kadyrov have both repeatedly denied documented evidence of LGBTQ Chechens held in concentration camps. Some prisoners have been tortured to give authorities the names of other LGBTQ people. At least a few reportedly have died behind the barbed wire fences.
Lawmakers in Hungary voted in lockstep for right-wing Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's proposal to change sex on legal documents to sex assigned at birth. Article 33 makes it virtually impossible for transgender and intersex people to change their gender on Hungarian government documents. The May 19th vote was 133-57. Hungary fared poorly among European countries in reports issued last week by the regional branch of the global queer rights group ILGA and by the European Union Fundamental Rights Agency. 84% of Hungarian transgender people said in a recent survey that widespread prejudice against them was due to the negative stance and discourse by politicians and/or political parties. Article 33 is one of the escalating attacks on LGBTQ rights disguised as COVID-19 pandemic responses by some countries. According to The Advocate, that list includes Cameroon, Egypt, and South Korea.
The U.S. Supreme Court refused to grant Idaho's request to block a transgender inmate from receiving gender confirmation surgery. Native American inmate Audrey Edmo's gender dysphoria is well documented, and she has been undergoing preoperative transitional care. The May 21st decision said that preventing her from continuing the process amounted to constitutionally forbidden, cruel, and unusual punishment. The state contracts with the private company Corizon Health for correctional facility medical care. Corizon doctors determined that gender confirmation surgery was not medically necessary for Edmo, who suffers from mental illness in addition to gender dysphoria. Based on their opinion, Idaho's Republican governor, Brad Little, insists that state taxpayers should not have to pay for the surgery. Yet Edmo's condition has grown so severe that she has twice tried to castrate herself. Justice Elena Kagan issued the decision without further comment, except to note that Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito would have granted the state's request. It upheld lower court and Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rulings to rebuff Idaho's objections to Edmo's trans-related care. The order said that the state's lawsuit challenging having to pay for the gender confirmation surgery was still under consideration. But that will soon be a moot point. ECMO surgery is reportedly scheduled for July.
Finally, the makers of Skittles,
Taste the Rainbow,
are celebrating the LGBTQ Pride Month of June by turning their rainbow-colored candy and packaging gray in the U.S. It's already a well-established Pride Month sign of support in Canada, Germany, and the U.K. But as Pink News reports, it's a first in the U.S., and the queer media watchdog GLAAD will be glad. They'll get $1 for every pack of Skittles purchased in the country in June, up to $100,000. A statement said that the multicolored candy would defer to Pride Month for the one rainbow that matters.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending May 23rd, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is usually recorded in the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, but we're recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. The news is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall. Stay healthy.
And I'm Laura Dickinson Turner. Stay safe.
Abbott was a writer who, in so many ways, was ahead of his time and still has much to tell us.
We'll get a taste of a posthumous collection by a queer writer who specialized in encouraging emerging avant-garde voices. But first...
Voices in my head again, trapped in a war inside my own skin. They're pulling me under.
A courageous young trans woman has just one question. Can you hear her now?
This is Outcasting Overtime from Media for the Public Good, producer of Public Radio's LGBTQ youth programs. Hi, I'm Brian, an Outcasting youth participant. On this edition, Outcaster Amelie talks about voice dysphoria.
I'm a trans woman, and for trans people, we experience something called gender dysphoria. Dysphoria is a hard topic to explain. Let's say that you're a cis meaning not transgender, woman, and one day you wake up and you look in the mirror and you find yourself with the body of a man. Now, after this initial shock has worn off, imagine just going through your life and having these things that you expect to be there just not be there. It's just a never quite fading feeling of wrongness about your body. That's more or less what dysphoria is. Now, it doesn't have to be about your body specifically. There's social dysphoria, which is about how you sort of appear as a whole person and in different interactions and situations. Gender-based mannerisms are an example of this. When you do things typical of a gender you don't identify as, it can also be about how people treat you and how you want people to think of you. Pronouns are a good example of this stuff. So generally, dysphoria causes feelings of unease and distress because your brain isn't getting what it expects. One aspect of dysphoria that is often overlooked is the concept of voice dysphoria. Voice dysphoria is exactly what it sounds like. It's essentially discomfort with the way that one's voice sounds and feeling like it doesn't represent who they are as a person. For example, I feel very dysphoric about my voice and initially didn't even want to do this episode. My voice as I naturally speak is extremely monotone and doesn't convey much emotion at all. At the moment, I am talking in a way that I've somewhat trained myself to do, which sounds a little bit more feminine, although frankly, I'm not really sure if it's working. This is what I sound like normally. I can't quite put into words what it is that I don't like about this voice. If I heard somebody else with that voice, I wouldn't think anything of it. But the fact is, to me, it sounds like someone else's voice, not my own. So when I speak using it, it's as if a stranger is speaking through my mouth. It's not that I don't like the stranger just simply isn't me. And when I speak and people hear that stranger instead of me, it feels bad. it feels bad to not be understood and heard for who I am. Because of voice dysphoria, I want to avoid talking in general, for example, on this show, because I don't want to present the world with this stranger's voice. I am a lot shyer and quieter than I would be otherwise. It adds a lot of extra stress when it comes to finding a job, because I generally am inclined to want to find jobs where I don't have to talk to anybody for any circumstances, which is not many of them. When it comes to friends, I'm able to speak with friends a lot easier, but in terms of meeting new people, it's very hard, because I just don't want to speak to them because I don't want their first impression of me to be with a voice that isn't me. For trans people, it is possible to change one's voice. I'm trying to do so with mixed success, but plenty of people can and have done it. For trans men, it's a little easier because hormones help to deepen the voice, but for trans women, it's basically all done through vocal training. At the moment, I'm seeing a vocal coach to help me with this. She's working with me, teaching me exercises for helping find my true voice. A lot of it is sort of weird, like you have to think about where in your mouth your voice is resonating from. It's all kind of complicated and I don't feel like I really understand it, but I'm trying. I hope that in time I'll be able to speak using my true voice instead of a stranger's. Being able to do that will help me significantly when it comes to gender dysphoria, which will help get rid of that sense of unease and just generally make me a happier person.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, based in New York. Our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to all Outcasting content. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, this is Leah Delaria, and you are listening to This Way Out.
Tiger King is a slice of life series, and like to make you feel a bit ill.
Our John Dyer V tells us what he really thinks later in the program.
The voice from the past entered my head today.
She missed out on a personal encounter with writer Steve Abbott in the 90s, but he came back from the past to give This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason some helpful ideas.
Will we survive the 80s? Is a hypothetical question that titles an essay written by Steve Abbott, a gay man and a leading figure in the 1980s avant-garde literary community based in San Francisco. In 1992, when attending Naropa University's creative writing program, I was scheduled to have a one-on-one critique session with Steve Abbott, but he wasn't there. He had attended the program and had given a reading and a workshop, but had to leave early because he was sick with full-blown AIDS. Nearly three decades later, in 2019, Beautiful Aliens, a Steve Abbott reader, edited by Jamie Townsend, was published by Nightboat Books. Abbott survived the 1980s, but just barely. He died in 1992 when he was 48. Abbott was many things, a poet, critic, novelist, and poetic cartoonist, but as his daughter Lisa Abbott, the author of Fairyland, a memoir about her relationship with her father, writes in the afterword of Beautiful Aliens. His work was about building community. It was about hand-illustrating posters for the readings he organized. It was about going out and engaging young men and women in classrooms, but also in the cafes, bars, and bookstores around San Francisco, sharing his vast knowledge and encouraging them to add their voices to queer culture in whatever ways they could, even if that culture wasn't getting mainstream attention. He knew how important it was to support voices on the edge, writers that were pushing boundaries, and weren't interested in keeping their readers comfortable. I found Beautiful Aliens, a selection of Abbott's writings, mesmerizing. For one thing, there were so many overlapping areas that we had in common. Queer writing conferences that were important to me, and favorite poets and writers, such as the lesbian icon Judy Gronn. I also found that Abbott was a writer who, in so many ways, was ahead of his time and still has much to tell us. Abbott writes, "It is clear that what we're doing now is killing us all. And as we project these attitudes onto other species and toward the Earth's ecological system, we are jeopardizing our very planet. I would argue that we can no longer afford to see anything, not even gay liberation or our survival, as a separate issue needing a separate cultural or a political or a spiritual agenda. This does not mean I intend to renounce my sexual orientation, far from it. Even in times of sadness or loneliness, it remains my greatest source of strength and joy." I found Beautiful Aliens, a Steve Abbott reader, edited by Jamie Townsend, published by Nightboat Books, to be that rare thing, a voice from the past that addresses the present. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I'm Diddly Day, an actor's life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
A lot of people want to hold this tiger. Many more would rather let it go. This Way Out's John Dyer V takes it by the tail.
It's not every day that a zookeeper went to prison for murder for hire.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Joe Exotic, and this is Sarge.
But Carol Baskin keeps saying, I can't have these tigers.
Carol is the Mother Teresa of cats.
We will end the private possession of these cats.
This is my way of living. And nobody's gonna tell me any otherwise.
What a story. And it got way bigger.
You may now kiss the grooms.
I'm sure y'all got a story to tell.
The incredibly popular Netflix documentary series Tiger King has generated a huge amount of commentary and controversy. In many ways, it can be considered truly indicative of the times we are living in and through, but you will have to be the judge. For those who haven't watched the show, cameras follow a highly colorful group of characters, most of whom are animal lovers, animal rights activists, and private animal park owner-operators. It quickly becomes apparent how divergent these descriptions are and how loose the definition of animal rights can be to different people. We learn the alarming fact that in the U.S., there are more tigers held in private ownership than there are living in the wild. Even more disturbing is the news that those animals could never be released back to their natural habitat due to habitat loss and destruction. This revelation is just one of many animal information bombshells dropped on viewers that are rather stupefying in their effect. Then we get to the people. Multiple private animal park owners are interviewed, and the word average could never be used to describe any of them.
Hey, I'm Joe Exotic, otherwise known as the Tiger King, the gay gun cane redneck with a mullet.
Most famous of the park owners is the titular Tiger King, Joe Exotic, also known as Joseph Allen Schreibvogel. Yes, Schreibvogel. The only way to sum up this animal-lovin', animal-killin', bleach blonde mullet wearing, gay country music lip sync video producing, people manipulating, and possibly conning queen is to quote our own RuPaul, honey, please. The few other animal park owners we witness, both male and female, are all right there with Mr. Exotic as far as, shall we say, a far-out worldview is concerned. Please do not even get me started on Carol Baskin and meat grinders.
Our mission is to ban the private possession of these magnificent animals.
You're an animal rights person, and you try and come into this facility, this is what you're going to be greeted with. Gonna have to kill me to shut me up.
This kind of over-the-top viewing material may not be for everybody, but fans of the classic gay films and series Sordid Lives will definitely eat it up.
It is jealous of a hot and lusty sordid lives they led.
That's true. That's very, very true.
We also meet the hapless normal people, usually down on their luck, who get pulled into the orbits of these tiger and other large animal collectors.
They lived in these terrible horse stalls, basically, like with sliding doors with bars on them. It's full of cockroaches.
These employees, or is it slaves, probably deserve better, just as we know the animals do.
This is my own little town. I'm the mayor, the prosecutor, the cop, and the executioner.
Tiger King is a slice-of-life series that could be compared to a chocolate cream pie. Super enjoyable white crust with a deep, dark center, and like to make you feel a bit ill later on. I highly recommend checking out the final post-series episode with Joel McHale interviewing many of the show participants. His sensitive yet comedic take on everything is just the right thing to help you digest it all. Not to be too catty, but for This Way Out, I'm Exotic Johnny Five.
I saw a tiger, now I understand. I saw a tiger, the tiger saw me.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Laura Dickinson Turner and Christopher Gall, produced by Brian DeShazer. From Outcasters, Amelie and Brian, produced by Mark Sofas, from Janet Mason, and from John Dyer V. Motionless in White, Marillion, and Joe Jackson performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, John Beaupre, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Together with all of our listener donors, they make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WWSX Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, Radio Phoenix, Phoenix, Arizona, 3CR Fitzroy, Victoria, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Now stay safe, y'all, and stay tuned.